Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we're coming to you live from a couple of places on the internet. We are live on Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, X/Twitter. Also, Instagram, that's another place we're live. Maybe you're listening later, wherever you get podcasts. It's all good. We're very excited to be here with our show tonight. Justin is in a cabin in the woods from the movie itself, right?
Yes. Wow. I'm going through all of horror movie canon in my sort of meta understanding of the genre. I'm at a cabin in Eastern Tennessee, actually.
Tennessee.
We threw the kids in the car, drove down, and we went to Dollywood.
Wait, for real? Nice. Yes.
Wow.
Turns out Dollywood, very nice. And the roller coasters will fuck you up. Had no idea.
Dolly don't play, man. I don't know why you would think.
She designed all of those personally.
Yes, she's a huge. That's what a lot of her first album was all songs about roller coasters. No one talks about it.
Yeah.
All of them. Before she got into the Jolene era. We were like, we're not really a roller coaster people. Let's try this one out. Didn't look it up until we got on. It's like the most extreme, one of the most extreme. Oh, the lightning rod. Didn't say. My 7-year-old daughter's like, that changed
my life.
Is that
what the t-shirt's from?
Yes, exactly. Blah. Yeah. No, but it was fun. It's actually a very nice amusement park.
Awesome.
That's cool.
Well, cool. Thanks for logging off of Dollywood and logging on to this. We have two great guests for you tonight. Later in the show, we're going to have Brian Michael Bendis is going to be here. But why don't we bring in our first guest? He is the guy, the creator behind Death of Comics Bookcase, an absolutely fantastic anthology that is running right now on Kickstarter. Ladies and gentlemen, Zach Quainton. Zach,
hey,
welcome to the show.
Welcome. Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Oh my gosh, excited to have you here. This project is great. It is, as I mentioned, on Kickstarter until May 2nd. I should have brought it up here and I did not, but you have so far successfully funded it, which is awesome, and then some. I don't remember the exact percentage, but I think you're going for like 6,000 and it's about 10,000 plus.
Yeah, that's
nice.
About right. Yeah, we're headed for stretch goals now, which is a nice place to be.
All? Yeah, right. Life stretch.
This is great. We got a chance to read this early, so we won't spoil too much if people are picking up the Kickstarter. But this is a super fun anthology that kind of takes the form of sort of a Tales of Cryptian anthology, except for the bookcase telling tales. But mostly it's a meta commentary on comic books and comic book storytelling. Where did this start? Because that's a lot of ideas to throw into the stew there.
Yeah, so it started with, I ran a blog called Comics Bookcase for like 4 years, from like until like 2022. And it started as like, it was just me writing about comics, and I brought in other writers, and soon it was sort of like consuming my life. And so when I kind of shut it down to focus on writing comics more, I wanted to do a horror host because I just always liked that construction. So I thought, why not dust off my old blog, turn it into a horrible anthropomorphic personification, and make a bunch of jokes about about comics blogging, being an aspiring writer, like all of the above. And so that's where that monstrosity was born.
Wow. One of the things that I'm always very interested in when you're talking about anthology is you have a lot of different artists working here, a lot of different teams working with you. This is very wonky, but like, what are the logistics like in terms of putting that together? Very easy, I assume.
Yeah, super easy. There's 20 different creators. Yeah. A lot of very polite emails. Like, I feel like I'm a super polite emailer now after having to kind of work with deadlines for 20 different people over the course of the year.
Yeah.
But one of the things that made it easier was doing it on Kickstarter. I wasn't beholden to some like publishing deadline. Like, it was going to go on Kickstarter when we got it done. So in addition to the polite emails, the other main logistical thing I had to wrestle with was just supreme patience and just waiting and working with people's schedules, because a lot of these creators are working on other projects and were able to fit in my 7 to 10 pages. I think that worked well for them to be short stories.
Can you talk a little bit about, I feel like a lot of anthologies are built around like a bit of a premise or a genre. I feel like this is built around like a tone or something a little meta-textual. Can you talk about sort of jumping from genre to genre in the different stories and how you sort of found everything, put everything together from a story point of view?
Yeah. So I kind of did these stories one at a time. Like I would finish one entirely and move on to the next one. And I just wanted to, this is the longest comic book I've ever made, and I just wanted to do a little bit of everything. So I really didn't limit myself when it came to ideas and genres. Like, I didn't want to just do all horror or all sci-fi or whatever. I wanted to play in a little bit of everything. And then the tone came in. It was just kind of like, I felt like I was taking too long to write all these, and jokes started to find their way in at the end. I looked for like little opportunities to sort of connective tissue in it. Like, if you notice in the second story, there's a character reading a comic called The Werewolf Priest.
And
two other little things in there. And the bookcase is there throughout to like poke fun and kind of reference the stories they just read. So the hope was it would pull people kind of quickly from story to story without them feeling disconnected.
Yeah, it's really impressive, man. There's a lot of different tones here, but it all feels like a bigger story, which is hard to pull off. You know, I really love the Clippy story where he gets to punch out the Clippy. I mean, that felt therapeutic. I mean, was any of this kind of therapeutic for you to kind of get these kind of dreams out?
The base question here is, have you ever wanted to punch Clippy? And was that behind the
smashed
whole
a laptop in any way?
Yeah, like every human being, I've wanted to punch Clippy, I think. Like, I know everyone of my age is sort of like within a few years knows Clippy, and I don't know a single person who's like used it effectively. Like, I was kind of asking around as I was showing off this art. But yeah, that one was kind of like frustrations. There's a lot of jokes in here, but I feel like it's a lot of frustrations too. So it's like frustrations with AI, frustrations with running a comics blog, and like, I mean, you guys know how much work goes into something like this, you know? And like, so that was kind of the tone that started to work its way in. Like, just I think every one of these stories is me working through something different.
Mm. Now the name of the book is Death of Comics Bookcase, but are you saying that comics are dead?
No. No, there's enough people saying that, so I don't really feel the need to join them.
It better not be.
It was more of a thing, like, there was a couple dozen people, tops out there, who knew me as the comics bookcase guy, so I wanted to, like, put that era to rest and, like, really start to kind of take seriously, like, trying to make comics instead of being the blogger guy primarily, you know.
Mm. Nice. So do you feel like this was sort of exercising that stuff a little bit, like getting that behind you?
Definitely. Yeah. Like, I mean, I don't know about you guys, but like, when I do something, like, I have a tendency to get too carried away with it. So like, this blog started to become like, I was spending more time on it than my job that pays me. So there was definitely, and it was close to my heart. I really did it 'cause I loved it. So I did want to kind of give it a send off, and that's, so it's a exorcism and a fond goodbye and violent comic book form.
You're asking the guys who've been doing a comic podcast for 18 years if we take things too far? Bold question.
I thought that might be relatable.
100%.
Well, what do you want to get into next then? I mean, obviously you're still in the midst of this and you're still in the midst of putting that out there, but do you have a thought ahead to the types of stories you want to tell next?
Yeah, you're right. Currently, I am incredibly exhausted because like running Kickstarter takes a lot of outreach and a lot of prep. But yeah, I actually intend this to be the first of like three in an anthology series. Like, every one of these ends, like, I think they're satisfying in the way they read, like, and they have endings, but they're all sort of built to continue. And I'm actually like writing the first story, The Werewolf Priest, like, I'm kind of developing into a full first issue, and I might take it to Kickstarter or pitch it or something, and then also kind of work on, I want to do more with every one of these stories and every one of these characters, and like Death of Comics Bookcase Volume 2, which of course would be Reign of the Comics Bookcases.
Nice.
What is it? I mean, it's a very funny narrator, and as I understand, like, that's the base level of the appeal there. But what is it to you? What's the core of the comics bookcase as the narrator?
I feel like the core of it is me talking to my wife about wanting to be a writer. So like a lot of times the bookcase is like giving these stories to these kids who do not want them and like have their own stuff going on and are just kind of like, would you stop? And so he's asking for feedback, but positive feedback. And like, it's just kind of that goofy impulse when you're starting out as a writer to try to share it with your friends and family, whether they really like, they want to be supportive, but they really like have their own stuff going on. And you're kind of just listen to me, you know?
Now if folks go to the Kickstarter, like you mentioned, you're into the stretch goal area right now, what can they expect? Obviously they're going to get the book in different forms, but what beyond that potentially?
Yeah. So yeah, we've got a couple different versions. There's the 48 page version, which is all story. And then there's a 60 page perfect bound version. That has 12 page of process stuff. So if you're really into like comics craft, you get 12 pages of script, inks, colors, letters, all that. Past that, there's like a 3 cover pack if you like variant covers. With John McCrae did the main cover, Raoul Allen did the second one, and Nick Cagnetti, who drew the Responsibility Teen Clippy story, did a superhero kind of style variant. So those are the main tiers. And then we're cruising towards the stretch goal, which is like my preference for stretch goals. Like I'm not really into like t-shirts and things. So it's going to be upgraded paper and then another digital short comic if we really like catch fire in the next 10 days or whatever is left.
Cool.
There's also a video of me on the page with my dog. And I'd love everyone to kind of say nice things about my dog if they like.
Oh my God.
The dog compliment stretch goal. Yeah. You got to hit the good boys.
$10,000, you can say nice things about my dog.
I mean, that's a viable goal. People love that.
People love dogs. I've used them a lot in the marketing. Like I had a tweet that's like, every backer this guy gets a tweet. Like, how can you turn that down?
That's very nice. Now, this is going to be up until May 2nd, I believe.
Yeah. Final day. 12 midnight on May 2nd. Please. We're having a print run for sure. Any extra money we raise now is going right towards Death of Comics Bookcase Volume 2. And I just really at this point want to get the backer count up because I'm just really proud of this and I just want to share it with like as many people as are willing to read it. So yeah.
Awesome. Well, this project is awesome. I do want to mention before we let you go, though, our next guest is Brian Michael Bendis, and he is the creator of a lot of things. But his book that I believe is out today, if I remember correctly, is Phenomena Matilde's Quest or Matilde's Quest. We'll find out the pronunciation very soon. And I was looking around doing a little bit of research to try to, you know, read about the book and get to know a little bit more about the book. And I was like, oh, there's a review here. It's a very nice review. And it was by you.
Yeah.
So if you don't mind, I wanted to bring in Brian for a second here to talk about this. Brian Michael Bendis, you are on mute, sir. You're on mute, but otherwise, hello, welcome.
Hi, I'm sorry. I was doing a you son of a bitch joke and I blew it. Anyway, Zach, yeah, listen, it was so funny. Like literally last night as I'm arranging my day, I had gotten forwarded an email from Abrams with your review in it. And then I got an email about this podcast. And then I went, oh, it's the same name. Wait, it's the guy with you. So I what a grand opportunity for me to just pop in real quick and say thank you for that review. And
oh, my pleasure.
Because it's putting putting new stuff out in the world is always nerve-wracking and exciting and all of the emotions. It never goes away. It's always there. So you coming in with those warm words kind of like relieves the pressure valve a little bit. And it was a big gift. And I wanted to say thank you. And I will repay the courtesy by being a backer on your Kickstarter, which I'm really excited.
Oh, man.
So thank you.
That's beautiful.
Thank you for doing that.
Thanks so much. Yeah. Yeah, I'm glad I love the book because this would have been really awkward otherwise.
This conversation was happening one way or another. So,
Zach, I read your review and I got some words for you.
but in the review was the words of a person I can see is in the middle of their own journey as a creator, And so hearing everything you're saying today about your Kickstarter and where you are with it, I fully celebrate this. It's a good feeling. You're doing everything the right way. And so I celebrate it and congratulations.
Man, thanks so much.
And all of these feelings, this nerve wracking, all of the things, it's constant. It's not, this is where you live now.
The exhaustion too. Does that go?
Yeah. No, here's what's funny. You're exhausted. And then but in about 3 hours, you're going to come up with a bigger idea that's going to consume the next 2 years of your life. like you're never going to be exhausted in not doing something. The exhaustion is part of the creative process. It's coming.
Well, it's good to know it's normal. So
it totally is. Yeah. If I can give you anything back, it's this is how it feels. And if it ever doesn't feel this way, man, you're probably doing it wrong.
And great news, anyone who's on our show going forward, Brian's going to pop on and give them this similar advice.
Yeah, you can just drop this in. Yeah. Well,
thanks awesome. So much. That really means a lot. Thank you.
Congrats, Zach. Great work. Great book. We will talk to you soon.
Thanks, guys. Take
great
care.
Work, Zach. Yeah, love care. The book.
Yeah.
All right. I didn't cut into his time, though, did I?
What?
No.
Okay, all right, that was great.
Repay him by bumping him off the podcast.
Get out of here. He wrote a bad review of us, so we wanted to like get him out.
All right. Well, yeah, Alex, I got to tell you, I am I'm in a weird headspace with you today because last night at like midnight on my Discord, a person who I think is a mutual acquaintance of ours, Talmer, posted a video of us from 15 years ago.
Wow.
15 years ago of us on stage in New York fucking around with a producer who I don't think I ever saw again. And but my friends Matt Fraction and Ed Brubaker were both on the video as well.
Oh yeah.
And literally last night they were both over here for Seder.
Wow.
The strangest feeling about how we're just looking at each other like, man, we're all still friends. And then that video pops up, which I don't know how you feel about. Like, I know we did that. I remember going to it. I have no recollection of being on stage. Like,
that was our 2 year anniversary show.
Is I want to say 1 year anniversary.
Was it 1 year anniversary?
I believe it was.
We did it once with Seth Meyers and Bill Hader, which was one of the great joys of my life. I honestly felt like I'm exactly where I want to be in the universe, watching Bill Hader do bits he couldn't get away with on SNL at the time.
That was so funny because after the show, you guys were all so psyched to be talking to each other. It was like star on star. Everyone was psyched. It was so cute. It was like a meet cute of the people who love each other.
And also I'm deeply passionate about Saturday Night Live. I kind of figured it out later, like years later, I figured out, it's because it's the closest thing in the universe to what we do. Like, it's the same, like being on SNL is like being in mainstream comics. If you're lucky enough to get there, great, make the most of it. And then you must go, you must leave and move on forward. And all of that, the creative process that goes into the quickness in which you have to make a choice. They're going to do it on Saturday. So make a choice. Right.
Yeah. And also once it's out there, it's you're like, okay, I got to move on.
Comics are very similar. Like it's shipping on Wednesday. Make your creative choice. Yeah. And I having talked to some of these people and having met them through you, realize, it's so rare to find someone who does something like what we do for a living. There are differences, but the emotions and the brain space are very similar. And so it's exciting to watch that happen and to have shared that space with them. Yeah, it was amazing. Yeah. And then I think I got on Seth Meyers because you introduced us at that thing. So thank you.
There we go. So we did it. It's all working out.
This is the only thing my kids have ever been impressed with. So.
Glad we could help. Now, first of all, before we even get into this, I feel like I mangled every single word in the title of your new book. Phenomenon Matilda's Quest, or is it Matilda's Quest?
Matilda's Quest. And Matilda, it's spelled the Portuguese way because my great co-creator, Andre, that is the name of his daughter.
Very nice.
So both the leads are one of our based spiritually on one of our children.
That's awesome. So this book, for anybody who hasn't checked out the first volume, this is the second volume, is out today from Abrams. It takes place, you don't describe it as a post-apocalyptic world, because that's not exactly what it is, but it is this fantastical world filled with quests. You have a main group, a trio, mostly with some hangers on. One of the things that I think is really wonderful about it, without jumping into specific spoilers for what
happens. It's all good.
It approaches things, certainly there's action in it, but it challenges the characters to approach problems in a very different way, which seems very calculated on your part in terms of presenting this to kids. I'd love to hear you talk about that a little bit.
Well, yeah, this the Project Phenomena was, I met Andre, as you do. He was working with Sam Humphries, one of my closest friends, and I'm sure you have all experienced this, where there's artists that you really like. Wow, I really like their stuff. And then there's some artists that just mindworm you, like, almost immediately. You're like, well, I'm thinking about this person a lot. I'm thinking about their stuff a lot. And Andre was one of those people. And I wasn't working with him. And also, he was working happily with friends of mine. And I tend to, like, don't stick your nose in. Like, don't be that guy. And this medium is filled with those guys. So I tend to, like, wait my turn if there's a turn coming. And lo and behold, it was around the time I went to DC that Andre was around, and I just really kept thinking about his stuff. And so we teach our students, like, you don't jump in with a big giant phenomena, 3-volume idea. You're like, let's do a couple shorts together and see if we got something. And we did a couple of short pieces together at DC. We did that first page of Young Justice he did with me was like, I literally was like, all right, that's it. I'm in. I'm like, I called him and I said, hey, what do you want to do? Like, what's on your mind? Like, you seem very special to me, and I'm thinking about you a lot. What do you want to draw? And he'd sent me like a bunch of what he referred to as busted pitches. He had drawn up and created a bunch of things, and he had sent them to some publishers. They didn't find traction, and he sent them to me. And because he had sent them to me like all at once, I saw them all as one thing. Like I was consuming the, like, I didn't see 8 different pitches. I saw one giant pitch filled with amazing stuff. And I kind of came back to him with knowing this is kind of a dicey idea, but I'm like, hey, what if it was all of this was all one thing? And he was, and I think I surprised him with it, which was the good response, and he was into it. And then I kind of cherry picked the things that I thought I had a passion for, and certainly things I wanted to see him draw, and off to the races we went, trying to build something not apocalyptic, not like you've seen before. Like, let's try something else in the genre. Yes, something happened to the world. Something, we say it was about 7 years ago, something happened, and now the world is like this. And these are the kids that are growing up in it, and this is what they have to do with it. And with every page turn, we get more and more clues and hints about what the world, what happened, where it's happened, how it's happened. But it really isn't about the how and why. It isn't the mystery of the phenomena, more along about how people deal with their present space, and what lessons can we learn from that we haven't learned before. And so these young idealistic kids are storming through a world that has been completely overrun by change, and yet sees some familiar things happening to a society. People are starting to fight again, right? People are starting like, this is a world that actually doesn't have any money in it, that you find out that story is currency. Like, who you are and what you've done, that's your value, right? Because wouldn't it be nice if that's what the world is like? I'm not anti-capitalism. I'm a big fan of money, but it does seem that it isn't the answer to all problems. And so creating this world for Andre, where story, and this is a version of a story being told, And for those of you, because we're on the comic book club, I can get into the weeds on this. Staring at Andre's work just like this. I'm looking at panels just like this, and it and I see the influences from all over, from manga, the Incal, Mobius, GF Darrow, and then it hit me that I'm working with a creator at the level of GF Darrow, in my opinion. Then it like struck me immediately. Like I remembered like a flashback of an interview that Frank Miller did talking about how he had to completely reinvent himself to write for GF Darrow. That it occurred to me like I can, it's none of this is about me and my voice. This is about doing everything I can to make this rise. And by doing it that way, it creates kind of like the third heat. Like we're creating something that I couldn't do on my own and he couldn't do on his own, but together here's us. Right. And
sorry, can I interrupt and ask, like, so you're saying that you saw his art and sort of, you didn't come in with a premise or any idea. You sort of just went through his art to work on this together and find.
No, well, I saw all of this art and came up with a premise and handed it back to him. Like, here's the story. Here's the bones of a story that would allow us this a much fantastical observation and journey. And here's a way the world can look this way. Right.
Wow.
And then we, in the middle of the pandemic said, and let's cast our children as the leads. Because we can't leave the house. Like we can't go do research this year. Like that's right. Not happening. And I love doing research. I love going places and discovering and talking to people. But this one is like, all right, this one's going to be personal. And so literally the young boy is named Bolden, named after my son, London. Matilda is named after Matilda. And Spike is kind of like this amalgam of me and Andre, who is kind of like their cranky uncle who's taking them, who's got all the secrets and taking them through this world to safety. But what it occurred to me is that I yet again have a lesson to learn from Frank Miller, which is this is the time to really put away all the tricks and tools that I use in other spaces and to only do what I can to help Andre create this material.
So this was your first time sort of working this way. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. And there's been versions of it throughout with other creators. And there's been spots where I realize, oh, get out of the way. They're on fire. Like you can see it with in Pearl with Gatos. Something else was happening on Pearl that hadn't happened on Jessica Jones even. And I'm not taking credit. It was him. Oh, my God, you're on another level. What do I do to make keep you there you know, like don't get in the way of this, right? And it happens magically almost sometimes, and so this shows up in my email and you feel like almost not to get to Spider-Man Annie, but you're like I have a responsibility here not to fuck this up. This is special. This is not like other stuff.
Yeah, you're not throwing a ton of word balloons on this page.
Like if there's ever a time to shut up, it is now.
Wow. You can really, I will say, you can really feel that when you're reading the book because it almost feels like the dialogue structure is almost a bell curve where you get to pages. For anybody who's listening to the audio podcast version, is this gorgeous 2-page spread just looking out at the city they're in. There's a gigantic eye, a fish flying, several fish flying, tall buildings, and like you're saying, the dialogue just sort of fades away and then it starts to creep back in a little bit, and then you'll have a couple of pages where it is the characters really establishing things and talking to each other, and then it starts to fade away again.
Yes.
Was that, I mean, it sounds like 100%. That's what you're aiming for.
Well, there's a lot going on here. I decided on top of everything else I just said, I decided to apply a lot of philosophies that I thought mattered here. One of which was a big one with me, which is a storytelling device called rhythm and release, which is you're basically creating a beat pattern that, and then turn the page, boom. Believe it or not, both Steven Soderbergh and Mel Brooks talk about this at great length. That's how, like, it's the same kind of rhythm of a thriller and the rhythm of a punchline joke has the same kind of pat, 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 getting you comfortable, 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 surprise. And the surprise is either horror or surprise is punchline. And for comics, and Alan Moore does this philosophy, it's you turn the page, wow. Turn the page, oh, turn the page, didn't see that coming. And that's using the comic version of it. So that's what I was doing with Andre, was creating a kind of a a meditation between us where he's free to create and I'm writing ahead of him. We know what the structure of the story is, but I'm writing just far enough ahead of him where I'm not smothering him, right? Like where right. We're like if he's going to yes and my ideas, I'll be able to yes and it in the next page. So
and does I, that make
I, yeah go ahead
sorry does that make you then want to, because you want to respond to him as well, you're yes anding his the art you're getting from him.
Yeah, and that's me either taking away or adding dialogue, and a lot of it was taking away dialogue, and which is always scary because you're like, you still want it to make sense.
Yeah, I really love those words.
To be clear, and thankfully his storytelling is always clear. Like right here, you can see right away, you don't even dialogue on that page. Mm-hmm. And I was very influenced. There's quite a few comics out there right now that I thought do a great job of world building without beating you to death with exposition until you need to know this information. Monstrous by Marjorie and Sana was one yeah. where I was like, boy, they really skate up to the edge of, yeah, we'll let you know when you need to know and get to a place where you trust it. Right. And the killer had this, and there's quite a few graphic novel experiences that I aspire to in the how little exposition can I give and still makes sense. And of course, John Wick universe is a perfect example of that.
Yeah. Right. Maybe I'm reading too much into this, but you said that the first book at least was made during the pandemic. And it seems like a lot of it is about exploring and reinventing outside spaces in a fantastic way. Was that anything that crossed through your mind that like, we can't go outside, so this is what maybe it's like?
Differently, I was watching part of my pandemic healthy mindset was rewatching every single episode of Siskel and Ebert that aired. By the way, highly recommend it.
Yeah.
Number one, I realized that the algorithm had caught me one night and I just got sucked in. And then I realized that most of my film thought was from this show. Like most of what I know about film was from this, growing up watching it diligently, everything. And also that the pop culture that they're speaking of no longer exists on any conceivable level. Like even when they're doing the films of Steven Spielberg, like they're talking about a world that does not exist, even though he still exists and those films still exist. So right. I was absolutely fascinated by it. And one of the things they talked about was how movies at their earliest stage, one of the joys was they would just take you somewhere else. Like a lot of films were just travelogues. Like we're going to Paris, like because you as an average person will never get on a plane and go to Paris. Like, so we're going to take you to Paris or take you to Dune or take you to, you know, we're going somewhere else. And I thought having now then look at Andre's work, you go, Andre is taking us to Europe. Let's make that part of it. And also at the time, I don't know how long we're going to be stuck in our house. So this may be the only time we're looking at Portugal through the eyes of a master illustrator. So let's do that.
As soon as I looked at this book, my first thoughts were Siskel and Ebert.
Yeah, there you go. No, but it's like lessons learned and how they apply to the modern day. You know what I mean?
Yes,
and every once in a while, like you said, like I joke about the algorithm, but the algorithm sends you stuff that you were thinking about sometimes. And like, oh, why was, yeah, you're right. I was thinking about this. Why? Oh, thank you. I did learn a lesson today that I needed to rehear.
Now, well, it's like constructive criticism, something we don't really have anymore. Mm-hmm. And that's what Siskel and Ebert were amazing at. They
yes.
talk shit and then, but also like sort of agree, like we're both sort of right.
Well, sometimes, but yeah, but that the idea that these transport you places, they take you somewhere else, that sometimes does get lost in the blue screens of the universe, you know, like going to a real place. I think that's why the Mission Impossible movies hit hard so well, because, oh, we're really there. Yeah. We're really running down that street at top speed at 60 years old.
One thing I wanted to circle back to is the kind of SNL process. A lot of times comedians like have a joke in their head. It lives in their head. And then they get to perform it to get it out. I mean, as a writer, like talk about getting these pages back. I mean, these are just such fantastical worlds that also has like a little bit of humor in it. Like the play on the London Eye is just fantastic.
Yes. And that I will say that's a perfect one. And there's also an SNL reference here too. I wrote, and I'm going to post it. I wrote the prompt for that spread. It's a couple of paragraphs of prompting, and then he took it to the level that you see there, and including the eye, which I did not write anything about, the London eye turning into a big giant eyeball, right? And I absolutely loved it, and this has been my screen saver for about a year and a half, because every time I need to think about this landscape and like stare at the architecture and look for locations for things to happen, because he's already established them. And then I wrote one page in volume two where it's like early morning and one of the characters is walking by and the eye is just staring and he's just staring at it. And then another character walks up and they're just both staring at it, and it's staring at it. No one's saying anything, they're just staring at it. And it's very much inspired by the classic sketch with Steve Martin and Bill Murray, where they're on set, they're on stage, and they just go, "What the hell is that?" And that's the whole sketch. Two of them looking off camera going, "What is that? Don't put your tongue on that. What is that?" That's the whole sketch. And I did a version of them just staring at the eye, clearly going, "What is that?" And just not needing to have it answered, or it won't change their lives in any way. Just, that's weird.
I did want to get back to something we were talking a little bit about earlier in terms of Matilda using nonviolent solutions to diffuse situations. I think I kind of know the answer to this, but certainly
I don't like violence.
Okay. Yeah. I could certainly see that it's like, this is a young reader book, so we're trying to impart lessons there. I could also see it a response to your superhero work. I could see it as a response to the outside world. How do you see it? How were you approaching it?
Well, interesting enough, we started making this, and like I'm happy to say, I think I've done this on every book, unless I know this is a hard-boiled crime book and we're going to it. I rarely label what it is until we see what it is. And particularly with Phenomena, we definitely did not see it for what it is until we were like about 40, 50 pages in. We're like, oh, interesting. This is like a YA, a fantasy adventure a la Airbender. But then I was able to then literally went to the Barnes and Noble, where God bless Alex, 15 years ago, that YA section did not exist. That beautiful section of YA graphic novels that are just, you know, infused into every kid's brain now, that like, you know, I'm so excited. We're getting a sense of it now, but so excited about what the graphic novels are going to be like for kids who grew up reading that instead of, you know. And there was Miles and Riri, part of that wall of books. Like I'm part of the YA conversation, which again, you know, I came up as a crime fiction writer, so it wasn't by design, but I'm so grateful to be part of it. So we were able to like go to a lit agent and go, let's the ever changing world of graphic novel publishing. Where does this fit? And, this doesn't answer your question directly, but it just, it'll get there. And we were able to like get a deal at Abrams to like really, you know, publish these as YA and they were like as YA graphic novels. I'm like, yeah, okay. They're YA graphic novels. So, and in that sense, I can tell you there's a bit of a purity of heart here when I tell you that the themes that popped out the other side, which you're correct about, just emotionally true. And I wasn't looking to lecture anybody about anything. I was just like, wouldn't it be nice if we learned some lessons from the past and apply them to the future? Because God damn, it doesn't seem that we're doing that. And wouldn't it be nice if there was a transformative event in the universe that actually made us rise to our better selves? And I may not have seen a lot of that going on my internet feed at the time we were writing it. And it definitely feels like it's going to be generational, where some kids are going to have to come in and go, no, stop, we're done. We're not going to do this anymore. And wouldn't it be nice, and what would happen? And not to spoil, but we're by the end of the second volume, you get a sense of what Matilda's journey was and is, and what Bolden's might not be. And it may be that we're watching the birth of the new leaders of this world, and them desperately trying to get everyone to behave as their better selves. And wouldn't it be cool if it worked? Mm-hmm. And so that's that. So yes and no. I don't Because the thing is, and then I go finish writing Phenomena, and then I go write Murder, Inc., where we come up with the best ways we can think of murdering anybody and enjoying it as much as the earliest days of Powers. So it's not like I don't think violence isn't fun, because I do. But
well, that's what I was going to ask. Like, so then how do you switch gears when you're jumping back to like murder time?
I've been able to, even during the headiest deadline days at Marvel, like I'll wake up and wherever my brain's at, I'll write that. Like, don't force like if I'm not in a funny violent mood, then don't write funny violent. And if I'm in, and if I wake up and Andre just threw that in my box, which derails my day, then stay there, write that. So I try to stay with and it's a huge privilege, I know, but I get to kind of stay with when going. And also, you could be like writing, you could write 15 minutes of the best Phenomena like material of you're going to write all month. And then 15 minutes later, you're something occurred to you and you're back writing a more adult fare. You just pivot. It's part of my undiagnosed learning disabilities that I've been carrying with for years, but I've made them work for me creatively. So I'm going to hold on to them. So nice. Yeah. And that is part of the blessing of having more than one project going on at once, is that wherever my impulses are that day, I can go towards them instead of having to bury them for something. I've had friends that like work on animated projects and they have to like bury their adult thoughts because they're working on, some Boss Baby kind of thing or something. Like, you know, it's understandable. That's the gig, but it's a privilege to be able to do both.
Yeah, that's a nice transition into a question we have from the audience here that's a little off the Phenomena thing, very off the Phenomena thing, but I'll bring it up here. Nat says, could you guys ask Brian if he's watching X-Men 97 and how he feels about them introducing the last will and testament of Charles Xavier?
I haven't seen it yet, only because there's 1,000 things on TV, like 1,000. Like, anytime you feel like you haven't seen or read something, it feels like a slight. And I am absorbing so much culture more than ever every day, and I'm still missing half the stuff, but I'm excited that X-Men 97 is great. It sounds like it's fantastic, and I will absolutely dive into it when the moment arises, which is not when I'm in the middle of 5 or 6 podcasts that need me to watch movies and take notes and stuff like that.
Here's another one from Edward Doherty. What has been?
But you know what I did? Just watch the pilot of Fallout, and I can't stop thinking about it. What a swing that was! I work at Amazon, and so it being part of the process and seeing that come out of it is like, wow, okay. Yeah.
Especially in this day and age, it feels like it's harder to get those big swings, and that feels even bigger.
Yes, I did. I go, what a big swing, and it landed. And I and it just, as a storyteller, sometimes you can kind of see the pieces moving, you know where it's going to go, and I genuinely have no idea where they're going with this.
And that's a big feeling. Well, I love it. So on that note, for anybody who doesn't know, you signed a development deal with Amazon for a couple of things, but specifically Jinx, Murder, Inc., and Pearl.
The overall line. I have a first look with them. Okay. For the those who don't know them, those who want to know where I've been. I've been at Amazon, they're looking at the whole line, but the first ones up right now are, to my genuine surprise and delight, they picked them, not me. Jinx, Pearl, and Murder, Inc., three projects that I love with my whole heart. Murder, Inc. is actually being developed by Z Chen, who did I'm Virgo, and is probably have been on this podcast as the publisher of TKO Publishing. Mm-hmm. And he's wonderful. And Chris Collins from Man in the High Castle and The Wire and John Wick is doing Pearl. And that's going very well. And I've been tasked to write Jinx, being showrun by Michael Chabon and Ayelet Goldman and Waldman. I can't believe what a delight and creative endeavor it is to adapt myself from 30 years ago.
Not a fan. How does it feel looking back at all that stuff?
The purity of soul is there, and I can't, but there's a whole, it's such a weird experience to be adapting something that really is a period piece.
A different person.
I had to call him up and go, does this take place in 1995 or 2025? And it takes place today. But that's a weird, even that question was weird to call and ask. But I'm a different creator and I get to relook at it. I will say very inspiring to me was the Scott Pilgrim redo, the Scott Pilgrim anime.
Was
like,
great.
Oh yeah. Cause I was like, oh yeah, that's just write it as if it's today. Just this, like all your impulses, just who you are today as your creator and what the world is like today. And just do that. So that's what I've been doing the last few months.
And is the goal to have all three of those live action, just because I know Amazon has been working with some folks on animated or otherwise?
Right now they're all live action and no one has said anything but. So okay. I think that's the case. And in fact, my friend Ed Brubaker is here in Portland because he's working on the Criminal TV show mm-hmm. for the same executives. So me and a couple other of my friends are also at Amazon with similar deals. And we're all working together in this space, which in itself is a gift beyond measure. Like, you know, just that I get to share it, to have this gift, but to also share it with friends again is unbelievable.
Is there, what do you think it is? Because we talked to Ed a couple of months back about the Amazon deal. We talked to Scott Snyder about working on Witches. It's just going back, they seem to be like collecting the Infinity Stones of comic book creators. Yeah. And then, kind of let it, not
which
letting
one
go
am I?
Wild. I don't want to say.
Great question.
Power Stone, is that mine? A good one? Is
well,
that
power.
Sure? Yes. I,
all right.
Powers yeah. good.
Top
I
of that.
Say mine.
But maybe you're not the right person to ask this, but like, what is it specifically about Amazon that is making this stuff work? And not that they're giving you carte blanche, I assume, but.
No. It's a development process for sure.
Yeah.
I will say there's a vision here at work that they're put together that they're cooking, and I like it. It's not too dissimilar to what I thought and may have said on the show 10 years ago, that if I was running a studio, I think I know who I'd call and say, here, go do it. Because mm-hmm. A lot of the things that you're seeing, particularly in creator-owned/independent comics, are the things that really kind of land hard in the culture beyond, you know, going back to Men in Black. I mean, these things, can really land hard, and some of them are the most intricately developed worlds and ideas you're seeing in any fiction, right? What's going on in Saga or Monstrous, like these are as intricate of genre fiction as can be done. And I would absolutely, if I was running show business, put them to work and make that happen. And something similar is happening here, and I'm so proud and happy to be part of it and hope it lands. Hope it's true. It would nothing make me happier than see these shows come to life, and yeah, not just mine, by the way. Of course, I would love for ours to do it, but it's kind of amazing. You're right. It's good times, and God bless the boys. That's if you want to know.
Yes. Well, and it's all as everyone's talking about, like, oh, comics don't work right now. The MCU.
That's
blah,
blah, blah. That's not and, true. Yeah,
agree. But yeah. I'm saying like. To all of this news, I feel like even pushes that even further. That like
we're in a very evolving situation yeah. that's been going on for about 5 years, and the evolution is so constant. And there's pros and cons to that. The pros are the pandemic made a lot of people put their foot on the gas as far as things they want to do or things that need to happen, and a lot of that's been projects we're seeing now. That I'm very, very glad have happened. A lot of people like, oh shit, is this my last year on Earth? Let me get to type in. And that's the good stuff can come out of that. And more pure stuff for sure. What was the question again? Oh yeah, no. And also, but there's the business, the evolution, like even like during the strikes, the writer strikes here in Hollywood, like there's been a lot of like upheaval on the executive front, like who's running the show is very different from what it was even 6 months ago versus a year ago versus 4 years ago. So lots of moving pieces, and from it will come something. And we'll see what it is. I think it's going to look a lot like network television, but it's because that wasn't broken. But as a business model, but it does seem that there's a lot happening. But I must say that in the graphic novel space, particularly, boy, it's just the evolution is amazing. It was one way for a very long time, like just the way it was, right? And this new version of every publisher having a graphic novel division and a target towards, you know, building real literacy in this culture. Oh my God. My oldest, who is now in college, got in trouble once for bringing a graphic novel to school when she was a kid. Wow. And so we went from a time where comics weren't allowed in school to comics are very important to school, to the point where we're fighting to keep them in school. Mm-hmm. That's amazing. Right. That just alone, and what that means culturally, it's just fascinating.
Absolutely. And what do you credit that to? Is that youth guiding that and sort of pushing that, or is it something else?
A couple of things. Number one, a lot of us who grew up reading comics going, hey, at least I was reading. Oh, I got a little thumb up there. I never know what's going to happen, right?
Nice one. Discourse Ghost is here with us.
Yeah, I always think the algorithm thinks I'm on track, or at least I'm feeding the beast. Anyway, so sometimes it's we all grew up reading comics and realize, hey, I was the only one in my click who was reading anything, right? So reading is good. Let them read whatever they want, as long as it was, so we have a bunch of parents who definitely feel that way too. And there's a world culture involved here where kids don't always see themselves in the country that they live in, but manga being and European comics being so available, it becomes a more world culture reading, and that stuff people find on their own, like and webtoons, all of these things are spaces that kids go to on their own and start building their own culture from it, and it's fantastic.
Have you, getting back to the phenomena thing a little bit, have you mm-hmm. interacted at schools with phenomena at all? Is that something that like you've bought and done lessons mm-hmm. about?
Well, this is our second volume, so we've had the book out now, so we've gotten the feedback you're dying for, which is as Zach gave us earlier today. But like we're getting this was built for people who, and I think about this with comics all the time, is like, why would people still be reading comics when all of the world's stories are available to you, like basically for free, like everything's available. It's still people buying independent comics. Right. And I think about, well, what do they want? Something else, something new, something different. All right. And like, my son's relationship to Star Wars is completely different than mine. Right. And I see him constantly looking for his thing. Right. Star Wars is maybe dad's thing or a thing that's always been there. Also MCU for now 17 years. My son's 11. It's as old. It's older than him. Right.
Yeah.
So sometimes not all kids, but some kids are looking for the new thing. We were all kids looking for new things at one point. That's why we ended up here.
Yeah. You mentioned this a little bit when you were talking to Zach earlier about how that feeling never goes away of the anticipation and stress of releasing a new book. But does it change? How does it feel releasing this book for an audience where that might, like some of them won't know you? Are those the people you want to talk to? Are those the people you want to hear from?
Yes. Number one, truth of the matter is, again, we're all inside baseball people. Like, you're running a comic podcast, so you know your stuff. Most people who read comics, read books, watch movies, they do not have an encyclopedic knowledge of the cinematographer's filmography like I would. They just watch in the fucking movie. They just want to zone out for a few minutes. They just want to read a book. Oh, is this good? I'll read it. That's it. That's the end of the relationship, right? And if we do our jobs good enough, eventually they might look and say, hey, who made me feel good today? Oh, it's that guy. I'll buy another one. That's it. That's the end of the relationship, right? And so sometimes comic book creators can stay on Twitter and there's the comic book conversation happening at them. They think the whole universe is talking about the inside baseball of comics. No, it's about 300 people. inside baseball comics. Most people just want to enjoy their books. I've had two experiences this year, one in Baltimore, and I just came back, not to be braggy, but I just came back from Belgium from a comic show, the Fax Convention. Both of them were equally magical, in that people were coming together to celebrate story and culture, and to the point where the other creators were looking at each other it's truly a magical thing, and it's that's what people are coming to these spaces for, is to feel that connective thread of just sharing the love of something. And sometimes for some people, the more popular, the more connective, and sometimes the most esoteric, the more connective. Like that Polish comic that only I read, like
right.
that can make a best friend out of somebody, and that's a magical thing. So answering your question, I very much like entering the space fully aware of that. It's a healthier space, and it's where a creator should be, and like me telling you what I can do for you, which is mm-hmm. I can take you away for a little while. I have something very cool to show you, right? and that's that.
Yeah, it's very funny to hear you say that when like Alex and I first met, because we were all holding just like any comic, and Alex was like, "You guys want to host a comic book podcast or show?" Back then, before podcast, and now it's like, "Oh, hey, you like this very esoteric Polish comic book?" At the same time, like. The bar has moved so far in the last like 15 years.
It has. And I'm delighted. And I think this is healthier than it's ever been as far as publishing stuff goes. I know it's harder to land, like getting everyone's attention is much harder unless you're Taylor mm-hmm. Swift, but I like what's being asked of us as creators. And that is to mm-hmm. bring that, which isn't out there yet. Right. That's a big push thing going on right now, is originality is being celebrated, and God bless. Because sometimes we've all been there where sometimes, no, we want exactly that over and over and over and over again from all people. And, you know, I was just watching a podcast about the movie Face Off and how everyone was acting like Jim Carrey in that movie. Like everyone's doing a Jim Carrey performance and like, cause they thought, oh, that's what everybody wants. And like, no, everyone wants you be original, like be yourself. Especially in Nick Cage. No one wants to see Nick Cage doing Jim Carrey. Be Nick Cage.
Let's get Travolta to do Jim Carrey. Oof.
I don't know how I brought you to that, but I just did.
There you go. Back to Phenomena for a second. So the second thought is out. You already mentioned this, so I feel comfortable saying this, but you have a third volume that is going to be coming. What can you tell us about that?
Okay, this is amazing. Are we good? Are we good?
Yeah. It's just Alex freezing.
Okay, just making sure it wasn't me. Amazingly, this is a three-volume deal, and we have been able to already finished the third volume. So I'm not talking in, you know, sometimes when people are on here, they're talking in hopeful tones.
Hypothetically.
But this the third volume is being lettered right now. So it is drawn and written. Wow. And so I can talk about it with a lot of clarity and passion, because boy, Andre nailed it. He nailed it. Nailed it. And I know it because my publisher is like, oh my God, he nailed it. I'm like, for those of you who are in the middle of the journey with us, I'm so happy that next year we'll be able to conclude it with even higher standard of Andre.
Well, I can't wait.
Awesome. Exciting. You can feel your excitement. Mm-hmm. And that's infectious.
Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate that. I'm also just, you know, Andre and I are doing a lot of press this week, and he says hello, by the way. The only reason he's not here is that he lives very far away, and this is 2:00 in the morning for him.
Yeah,
but he does send his regards sincerely. And we're doing a lot of running around, and it is such a great feeling to not only have accomplished this with Andre, but we feel better about each other now than we did when we started, and we started pretty great. Wow. So we're at the tail end where things could be a little okay, it's been a lot of years of this, but no, we're it's such a wonderful feeling. And if you feel that, it not only that we accomplished it, but in the tone of which we accomplished it, I'm very proud of. Yeah,
that's awesome.
Well, you guys definitely should be. It is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, congratulations.
Thank you. I deeply appreciate that.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks, Brian. Have a good night.
Oh, my pleasure, guys. Have a good one. Can I, before we hang up, you got to go. I'm going to promote some other people's books.
Go for it.
Sure. Yeah.
Please.
Sex Criminals. Sex Criminals by Chip and Matt. I know Matt's one of my buddies, but this is an exceptional achievement.
Wow, look at that.
Another one of my friends just was over here last night for Seder and dropped off their book, The Second Chance of Darius Logan. This is by David F. Walker. This is a novel.
Oh, wow.
David Walker.
That's just words, you're saying.
It was worth no pictures. You got to come up with the pictures yourself.
Oh, yeah, and,
not interested. Thanks so much, though.
David, co-creator Naomi and Bitterroot, and I just, what an achievement.
Oh, yeah.
And
Bitterroot.
And on top of this, I couldn't wait to show this to somebody. Look at this thing. This is the Pretty Deadly Artist Edition.
Oh, wow. Look at that.
Yeah, that's huge. I just got dropped off last night, and it is beautiful.
And just to be clear, this book looks heavy. This is
look at that.
Yeah, so I just wanted to promote some other comics on here while we're on.
Nothing really. Yeah, let's talk about comics. That's great.
So many of my friends are just blowing the roof off the place, and it's just a inspiring, delightful space to be in, and I just wanted to share it with you guys.
Oh, no, we appreciate it very much.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right, thank you, Brian. Thank you. Always good seeing you.
So great to talk to you.
Yeah,
right.
Definitely.
Thanks, guys. Jinxworld.com. All right.
There we go. Perfect ending.
He
killed it. Yeah.
Cut him off. He knew how to
do it. Yeah, yeah.
He knew how to do it. Brian Michael Bendis, you can check out Phenomena. Matilda's Quest is in stores everywhere from Abrams, like we said. It's awesome. Great story.
Oh, my
really,
God.
He was definitely plugging Andre's art.
It's worth it for the art alone. I mean, it's unbelievable.
You just listen to this. You got to get out there and check this art out.
Yeah, there we go. We are going to move on.
It is Mobius-esque.
Yes, ooh. It is Mobius-esque. I think Zach, in his review, compared it to the Incal meets Akira, which I thought was pretty
interesting. Yeah.
The Last Kids on Earth and their superhero alter egos are back in the latest installment of the graphic novel spinoff series, The Last Comics on Earth, Too Many Villains. Jack, June, Quint, and Dirk face their biggest challenge yet, creating the sequel to their hit graphic novel in a mad dash, puzzle-filled race across Apocalyptia to stop the biggest evil plan in history. Hey, you know what the creators of Last Comics on Earth's evil plan is? Make me and my kids love these books. Seriously, my younger kid is a huge fan of both the Last Kid series and the Last Comic series.
It's true.
And now I'm hooked too. The whole team has created a delightful cast of characters with some fantastic kid-friendly art throughout that will appeal to readers of all ages. Buy your copy of The Last Comics on Earth in stores today. You can also visit lastkidsonearth.com to learn more.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
We're going to move on with our next section, which is my second favorite section after our interview section, and that is audience questions.
Oh, man. Second favorite.
I don't know. I had a nice time talking to Zach, talking to Brian. I'm just nothing against the audience.
This
I love
the first
audience.
Time you've said and that wasn't your favorite. After 18 years.
Got to shake it up.
There's motion.
Yeah.
Got to keep it fresh in the bed. You know what I'm talking about, Pete?
Oh, man. That is just ridiculous.
Hopefully the audience brings it home for you, Alex.
There's so many people that just logged off right now because they're like, you fucker, man.
Well, this week, Brett Macris, a.k.a. Stray Bullet, a.k.a.
Stray Bullies.
He curated a drink for us. It was a Negroni. There you go. I think the last time Brian was on, he did a drink for him. So he was like, I can't do that again. So I'm having a Negroni. I don't know about you guys.
That's nice. I'm out of my home, so I'm having a tiny canned margarita.
That is the smallest margarita I've ever seen. Pete.
Let me tell you, though, it's got it. It's got the juice.
It's got
and then I'm
kick.
Drinking a local beer. A local
Wait, you're mixing margarita and beer? You're not going to live tomorrow. I mean, you just...
Live.
Tomorrow doesn't exist to you.
Oh, sorry. You think your steady diet of just Landshark is healthier?
Knock, knock. Who's there? Landshark. Speaking of SNL, come on.
Yeah.
Knock, knock, Pete, it's your liver. Stop giving us Landshark.
Wait, can I make a drink recommendation, actually? I got sent, because my job now is to drink liquor professionally.
What a gig you got.
It's not great. I felt pretty bad today. But I got sent a Truly Hard Seltzer, which I've always been like very iffy about the whole hard seltzer thing, honestly. Yeah. They sent me Truly Tequila Soda, which is out now.
Wow.
Which is tequila, sparkling water and fruit juice, so that's it. And I was like, all right, prove it to me. And I was like, oh, this is good. This is very good. They have a spicy watermelon flavor.
Wow. That is...
Wow. As soon as they get
do you know what's great?
Oreo is... Pringles flavor, then you'll be happy.
Oh, I'm in. I'm all the way in.
The Sunny D seltzer is great.
Ooh, I've seen people talking about that.
Oh, that's an alcoholic seltzer?
Oh, yeah, man. You got some purple stuff. You got some Sunny D. I mean, come on.
A drink for children is doing alcoholic seltzer? That's
you know it.
Yeah.
That's a gateway.
Have you had the High C hard seltzer?
Yeah.
Is it Ecto Cooler?
Yeah, Ecto Cooler comes in a juice box.
Nice.
Have you had the vodka breast milk mixture? Really good.
I did, actually, but I don't want to get into it.
It's the ultimate white Russian. It's beautiful.
What just happened? What just happened?
All the Game says, hey, guys, got any The Killer and Rebel Moon thoughts, takes? The Killer?
Wow. That's a hell of a combination. Right. Well, I mean, Bendis mentioned The Killer in in his interview. And I will say, I love that take because The Killer as a movie is fantastic. And it is a Fincher movie. It just came out on Netflix. Not came out recently, but I guess late last year.
Yeah.
But fantastic movie and super graphic novel.
Well, it's based on a comic book.
Yeah, it is.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. But like, I think the translation to the film side is very good. Very spare dialogue. The shot composition is beautiful throughout. Fight sequences, the sort of chapter headings they do. It's a fantastic movie.
I mean, one of my favorite things about the comic is the tone of it, and I always wondered how they would kind of do that in the movie, so it'll be interesting to check out.
Oh, I love Gotta watch it. I was very surprised by that. That's just a fun, very focused David Fincher movie. It's not like blow your brain out so much as just these are great fights. Michael Fassbender is great at it. Mm-hmm. It is just like, what if we followed a killer and he was just kind of doing his job, the end? And that's sort of the movie, and love it. Rebel Moon, that's out on Netflix. I watched the first one, and that was very bad. And I heard the second one was worse. I was actually planning on watching it just to be like, all right, I'll just watch it so I know what some people are talking about.
Why would you go back if you hate
but it? When I heard that there's like a 10-minute long sequence where they're just tilling wheat, I was like, no, I'm out. I can't do that.
Oh, now I'm in, dude. Tilling wheat?
He loves tilling.
Dude, there's nothing like tilling your own wheat, bro.
I've been waiting for, now that both are out, I'm going to hit myself in the head with a hammer and then put them both up.
Nice.
Did you hear the thing Zack Snyder talking about where we knew he was going to release?
Based on what you just said, I'm already out.
Yeah. We knew he had already talked about it. He's like, yeah, before the movies came out, he's like, we're gonna have the regular movies and we're gonna have director's cuts. And everybody's like, those are not director's cuts, those are, you're already planning them. A director's cut is like, the studio took it away from me, now I'm doing my own cut. So that's not what that is. But on the press tour for Rebel Moon Part 2, he was like, yeah, we actually did alternate takes of everything. So it's almost like an alternate reality version of the movie where he used a different take. So everybody's acting slightly different in the other cut of the movie. That's not only is that insane, that's wrong. Like, that's the wrong way of putting together a movie.
That's exactly the opposite.
A director's cut is not like the goal. The goal is the director's cut is, like you said, a failsafe. Eventually, this guy's going to be having people just like come to set. Crowds everywhere just watch me say cut and let me like scream every time I do it.
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of feel like Rebel Moon Part 2 is the one where like the wheels come off of the whole Snyder cut a little bit, cult a little bit, but I'm probably
good luck. Let's see. Love the
that's
take.
There's a point with every cult where people are like, I'm good.
Yeah, a lot of people just quietly walk away from the car.
I don't think you can. I don't think they let you do that.
Historically.
Yeah, definitely.
Virgil Rosa says, what did you guys think of the Deadpool and a Wolverine trailer?
Oh, man, come on. This thing looks unbelievable. I don't know if I'll ever stop watching that movie. It just looks glorious. It's I want to just sit there at the bar with Wolverine. You know what I mean? Get kicked out night after night. I think it's... this is a great premise.
Psyched. I love, like, the progression of trailers is very exciting. The deepening.
Mm-hmm. Can I present a slightly contrary take? I love everything plot-wise that's happening in this trailer. I love all this stuff that Deadpool and Wolverine are doing. The fights look killer. very excited about Cassandra Nova, like all the X-Men bad guy Easter eggs, the giant Ant-Man head. Very fun. All of that's very fun. A little too much cursing, I gotta say.
Oh, like, get the fuck out of here.
It felt
fuck
like
you.
We could do this. We're little kids and we get to curse now in our MCU.
I'm so sorry, Alex. Have you seen any Deadpool?
That's what are you talking about?
I don't know. I don't know. There was like one F word, F bomb, if I might say, too many.
Oh, wow.
Old man Zalbin. Here's what I'd say. The let's fucking go thing where Deadpool is like, let's fucking go. And then Wolverine says, let's fucking go. If that was the only curses in the trailer, it would have hit so much harder.
Oh, shut up.
I mean, that's fair to say that, like, oh, they should have just used them a little differently. But to be like, that's too much for my delicate sensibility. I don't know.
Anyway, otherwise, great. But not to my taste.
Hard disagree.
They should edit it down. I want to see the director's cut that's PG-13 or PG, honestly.
Schreckler so you, says, you want a different movie is what you want.
Yeah, I'd rather be watching Wish on Disney Plus. Schreckler says, what's your favorite pop culture knockoff, like how Deadpool was one of Deathstroke? I will mention, this is not answering your question. It is wild how everybody keeps going back, or more specifically, Rob Liefeld keeps going back and forth on that, because I feel like there was a point where he's like, yeah, Deadpool is Deathstroke. And then later on, he's like, absolutely not, totally separate characters.
Yeah.
Which is not true.
Yeah, but I mean, I think maybe sometimes you kind of feel like there's more to Deadpool than that. Like he might have started out as that, but it's evolved.
They have the same mask, and one of them is named Slade Wilson, and one of them is named Wade Wilson. They are different characters, but...
Very different characters.
No, not really. Not when they were created. The idea that Rob Liefeld like had the Deadpool that we just watched the trailer of in mind when he created Deadpool is insane. So, like, he had a Deathstroke, Deadpool, Slade Wilson, Wade Wilson. Get out of here with that coincidence.
But favorite pop culture knockoff otherwise? Do you have any other ones?
Well, Doherty.
Space Wolverine is cool.
No, that's not what I'm talking about. Doherty nailed it with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. You know what I mean?
They were a knockoff.
I mean,
right?
Yeah, Daredevil, the hand, the foot, you know, all that kind of fun stuff.
The Frank Miller.
Yeah.
Yeah. Spawn for me. Knockoff.
Spider-Man knockoff.
Spider-Man, yeah. As Spider-Man and Venom.
Wait, are you saying you love Spawn?
I love Spawn.
Yeah, you do.
let's see.
I mean, I got to say, the only way that a knockoff really rises is when they do become something different. Like we're saying, Deadpool. Spawn's technically
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles,
yes. Lobo technically is much different than Wolverine.
No, he is. He was inspired by Wolverine. They were literally like, let's put Wolverine in space, and that was the initial genesis of Lobo. And then
Space Wolverine.
They changed.
Punisher is a knockoff. I mean, there's a ton of different stuff.
Yeah.
Punisher's a knockoff of just guns.
No, he was based off this character, the hitman that like a writer did for a while.
Wasn't he based off of what was the Charles Bronson character? The movies, revenge movies.
Yes. I just had it in my brain and now I can't think of it.
Bang, bang, shoot. Yeah. I don't know. Let's do another one and then it'll come to us. Frederica Rosa says, also, will there ever be an Aquaman 2 episode? You won't believe this, but this is 100% true. Almost every single time we finish taping a podcast that is not this podcast, when we get off, we say, okay, and we have to do our Aquaman 2 episode.
That's true.
Yes.
So top of mind.
I mean, all three of us have seen it, right?
We have all seen it. Should we very quickly do our Aquaman 2 episode right now? Or?
Yeah, sure. I will say messy, but I liked it better than Alex, I bet.
No, wow. I liked it better than Aquaman. I was like, at least
definitely better than Aquaman.
Yeah, this is crazy and stupid, but at least I don't know, it feels like a cartoon. I can't hate something where Black Manta is like, I have a volcano base where I'm using to create giant monsters on my island.
I love it at the point in the movie where they're like, yeah, we don't know what's happening either. And then it was like, keep filming or CGIing. Like, truly, the plot loses focus. I could be like, that's the point. In the future podcast we do, I'd be like, that's when they gave up.
Yeah.
You can see it.
Well, but also at the beginning, I was definitely all in when I was like, wow, this is the third time somebody has peed in Aquaman's mouth in like 10 solid minutes.
Yeah.
That's a lot of pee in his mouth. So I was very, very into that. But.
Well, all right.
What was I saying?
No, you were talking about kinks? You were talking about kinks. Oh,
that's all kinks. You've been saying. You said that. You mentioned that during both interviews at the beginning.
Quick question.
And when
question
we went to our
you.
Favorite section, what are we drinking?
Mouths.
You said piss. You said children's piss.
A big glass of baby boy piss.
What is happening?
Baby boy piss.
There's
the original tequila. Anyway, I don't know. We can talk about this in the eventual episode. I've ran out of steam here. What else is... Ooh, here we go. Easy Reader says, are you looking forward to the Transformers animated movie?
Yeah,
what?
Came out a long time ago.
Yeah, there's the Transformers animated movie that holds up. It's glorious.
No. There's a new one called Transformers 1, and it's basically about, like, what if... It's not Megatron and Optimus Prime.
Oh, yeah, they were like, on Cybertron, and they were kind of like, they knew each other and were kind of friends and stuff
beforehand.
Yeah,
it's like they're best bros in college. It's Brian Tyree Henry as Megatron and Chris Hemsworth as Optimus Prime. And Scarlett Johansson, Lawrence Fishburne, Keegan-Michael Key.
Point me toward
Bumblebee.
The truck daddy I need to watch and listen
John
to.
Hamm as Sentinel Prime is probably the truck daddy to watch, I would say.
Truck Daddy Power Rankings coming soon. We'll do that right before our Aquaman 2 podcast.
Well, there we go. Last thing we could just end for our Aquaman 2 podcast. Patrick Wilson running was the only redeemable moment to that movie.
I mean, shouts.
That was hysterical. I mean, that whole like running with his arms back like he's an anime character was just hysterical.
Yeah.
Patrick
also,
Wilson in those
perfect...
movies is just killer in general.
Perfect last shot for the DCEU that he's like, eating a cockroach burger, and he's like, this is good, actually. I was like, oh, that's a metaphor. You ended on a metaphor there. Thank you very much. All right, that is it for your audience questions, which, you know what, you've all redeemed yourself. This is now, once again, my favorite
totally
section.
Redeemed
Let's
yourself.
Move to my second favorite section, which is trivia, and for that, we're going to turn it over to Pete LePage.
All right, it's the part we give back to you, the lovely audience. It's an opportunity to win $25 free to Midtown Comics Online, because if you had $25, you'd want to go to a comic book shop and get some comics. So all we need is a first hand up, a hey, pick me, a
Easy Reader says pick me a.
All right, Easy Reader it is. Also, shout out to Spidey616, man. I'm glad he got some love in this in today's ep.
Oh, I don't see where that comment is, but Tamer Dar, yes, got a shout out there. Yeah. And also John Balway says, just like to say, great interview, thumbs up. Thank you, John. Appreciate
Thank you, John.
But Easy Reader, you were up for trivia. Drop your answers in the comments. Pete, take it away.
All right, here we go. Today's trivia is on comic book writers and artists, and a small nod to the legend, Barbara Rush, RIP. Please listen to all three options before making your selection. Here we go. Question number one. The Chicago-based writer/artist so far has won 2 Eisners and a Golden Issue Award. Is it A, Daniel Warren Johnson, a.k.a. DWJ, B, what's that dude's name that sounds like a fancy couch? C, Ned Davenport.
What?
Yep.
What do you call a couch a fancy couch a Davenport?
That's the definition of a Davenport is a fancy couch.
Wow.
And well, Easy Reader's correct. That is A. I
feel like he's going to guess A for all of them, but I guess.
As everyone on trivia should. Spoiler.
Wow. Well, you know, you never know how things go. This artist so far has won 2 Eisners and 3 Ringo Awards. Who is it? Is it A, Sanford Green? B, no, the guy who is super nice and a caring person? C, Edgar Deering?
Wow. A? Is it A?
A is correct.
There we go.
Killing it. Here we go. Last one. This amazing artist may look innocent, but has done some scary type bananas art. Who is it? Is it A, Gabriel Rodriguez? B, the annoying bald guy who is a close talker. C, Dick Pinner.
Pete, whew, late at night, Googling fancy couches. Davenport. Just give it.
Correct. A is correct. Easy reader. Well,
congratulations.
Done.
Easy reader, shoot us an email. You're going to get you a gift card to Midtown Comics. Pete, what is the secret movie that you were teeing up here?
Well, of course, I'm talking about the 1953 cult classic, It Came from Outer Space.
Wow. Pete, what is the secret fancy couch you're talking about? It's a Davenport. Ooh. We got it.
As we all know, comics are awesome and we love them. Pete,
yes,
what are you looking forward to that is coming out this week?
So much great stuff. I'm really looking forward to arguing with you guys later. But Man's Best number 2, Daredevil number 8, the anniversary-ish, and Once Upon a Time at the End of the World number 14.
Oh, how dare you eat my lunch? You know
that, the relationship. Come on and get some, dude. I'm looking for a fight in the stack, bro.
Justin, what about you?
Once Upon a Time at the End of the World is definitely what I was going to say. Shouts to the two X-Men books coming out. I feel like I'm not saying I'm excited for them.
We're
approaching something.
Yeah.
With that, but I want to say Ultimate Spider-Man, the Jonathan Hickman book. I feel like this is something we'll talk about more on the podcast. But it's something. It's hard and easy to sort of reboot Spider-Man. It's happened a bunch of times, but it's hard to make it feel fresh. And I feel like this book has really done.
Oh, really?
So far.
Oh, you think that's fresh, do you? You think that's so fresh?
Okay, save it. Save it for the stack. Couple of things that I was very intrigued to check out that are coming out tomorrow.
Rehashed. It's rehashed.
I'm going to give a shout out. I was very interested to check out Drawing Blood number 1 from Image Comics. This is written by Kevin Eastman.
Come on!
Back in the day, what we would call a roman a clef, where it's Kevin Eastman telling a very fictionalized version of his relationship with Peter Laird, but then adding a crime layer to it at the same time. So very curious to see, like, from a gossipy tell-all perspective, what's going on there. Also, I will give a shout out to, without spoiling too much of my review of this one, but Spectrograph number 1 is coming out from Distillery. This is by James Tynion IV, art by Christian Ward.
All
I will say is this book is so upsetting. It gave me nightmares last night.
Art is unbelievable.
Yeah, we'll talk about
the panels.
Just prepare yourself for the most upsetting you've read in a long time. And one last one that I want to give a shout out to with a little bit of a plug. Universal Monsters, Creature from the Black
Lagoon. Yes, dude. Lives, yes.
From Image Comics. I did an interview. I talked to Dan Waters. He wasn't able to make the live show. So we have about a 20-minute conversation with mild spoilers for the book that will be rolling out in the Comic Book Club feed tomorrow. Also talking a little bit about Destro, just a little bit about that book coming up. Just to give a tease there. But that's going to come up after the Stack podcast in the Comic Book Club feed. And folks, that is it for this week's show. Couple of people we want to thank. We want to thank Zach Quaintance for coming on to talk about Death of Comics Bookcase. Check that out on Kickstarter until May 2nd. It's great. Super fun. Also, Brian Michael Bendis. Always great talking to him.
Oh, man.
You can check out Phenomena. Matilda's Quest is out today in bookstores.
Check it out.
Gorgeous, gorgeous art. Next week, we're going to have a Crime Comics Spectacular.
Yes.
We're going to have a panel discussion with 4 amazing writers on here, all talking about crime comics. Gary Phillips, Dennis Hopeless, Lee Loudridge, and Alex Segura are all going to be here. We're going to talk about crafted crime comics, what goes into it. Should be a fun time. A couple of other things to plug. Comic Book Club News, our daily news podcast, Monday through Friday, every morning in the morning at 6 a.m. Marvel Vision, our Marvel podcast. We are recapping X-Men 97 right now, so check that out. Patreon.com/comicbookclub to support this show and all the shows we do. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple, Android, Spotify, or the app of your choice at Comic Book Live on Twitter/X, Comic Book Club Live on Instagram and TikTok, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, don't forget to pick up Truly Tequila Soda in stores.
What the fuck just happened?
Wow, what a twist. What a heel turn.